And now, from the Green 960 studios in San Francisco, this is An Organic Conversation with Helga Hellberg.
Welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, relationships, and life itself. I'm your host, Helga Hellberg. I hope you had a great week. Thank you for the wonderful feedback we keep getting. Very fun. Kirsten from Berkeley, California, loves the show and wants to know how she can find out more about the photographer, the artist we had on the show a couple of weeks ago. The man was Douglas Gayton, G-A-Y-E-T-O-N, and his new book is called Slow, Life in a Tuscan Town. You can find further information, for example, on how to buy his books and links to his site always at anorganicconversation.com. David from Oklahoma City writes us, "We listened to the show about Ayurveda in class and wrote essays about it. It's very cool that you expand the role of food into the area of healing and community building and how we can live with a lighter footprint on this planet. I'm eating mostly local and organic food and encourage others to do the same. An Organic Conversation has really opened my eyes to the importance of our daily choices. Thank you." Thank you, David from Oklahoma City. An Organic Conversation has reached the classroom. That indeed is very cool. And I don't think that I am expanding the role of food, but that food simply does touch on the entire fabric of life. If you have a comment or a question, please email us at share@anorganicconversation.com. My guest on the show last week was Dario Cecchini, Italy's world-renowned master butcher. He said a lot of great things that deeply moved me. Dario's work is a sincere and constant offering of respect to each animal that he butchers and to life itself. He said that his passion for life is so deep because he faces death every single day. Marin Organic held a fundraiser at Cavallo Point in Sausalito, Marin County, the day after the show last Sunday, and it was an exceptional and unusual melting together of philosophies and agendas to support the overarching theme of what values we focus on in this lifetime. The showcase of Douglas Gayton's art, Slow, Life in a Tuscan Town, who was a guest on my show the week before, the calming and grounding beauty of Cavallo Point, the celebration of food and food producers from the Bay Area and Tuscany, guests such as Alice Waters, Dario Cecchini, and many, many others, it all contributed to something much greater than the individual pieces. The afternoon held reverence to beauty and life while asking a very sincere and critically important underlying question. How do we relate to the food, to the land, and the people that feed us every day? Our future as a society is dependent on our answer. In the presence of Dario Cecchini, Italy's master butcher, I was again reminded that we must include death in this conversation. We must hold in our awareness that this life is a gift that will end one day. Not to get depressed, but to tenderly hold this truth as the very motivation for life. I believe that a nation cannot develop a reverence for life without it. You're listening to An Organic Conversation, and we'll be right back after the break.
Desperate for changing, starving for truth, closer to where I started, chasing after you, I'm falling even more with you, letting go of all I've held on to, I'm standing here until you make me move, I'm hanging by a moment till forgetting all I'm lacking, completely incomplete. I'll take your invitation.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation, and my guest today, I'm very excited, is a real cowgirl who has, with her partner Peg Smith, heavily influenced the Art and Cheese movement here in the United States and even beyond. Sue Connolly, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Helga.
How are you?
Very good.
You just headed over from the Ferry Plaza market, the farmer's market, where you have a permanent booth.
Yes.
How is it? Is it busy already?
It's busy, even though the bridge is closed today.
Oh, that's right.
For repair, but still it seems like a full crowd. And
on this foggy morning. So you co-own and operate Cowgirl Creamery. Tell us about it. When did you start and what do you do? What do you offer?
Well, Cowgirl Creamery actually started as a marketing company called Tamales Bay Foods. And this was back in 1993 when Albert Strauss was transitioning his dairy to organic. This was the first certified organic dairy west of the Mississippi. And I got so excited by this concept that I sold my shares in my restaurant and went to work for Albert marketing his milk. And
Where was your restaurant?
My restaurant was in Berkeley, Betty's Ocean View Diner. It's still there. So I peddled this milk into the world that I knew, the restaurant world and retail world, and brought along with it three other dairies, the Bellwether Farms sheep milk, Redwood Hill goat products, and then a Matos family, a Portuguese cheese producer, and marketed it as a regional food group so that because these companies are so small that alone they cannot make an impact in the marketplace. But I thought working together as they do in Europe when they define their appellation or their origin of the food, it becomes a more powerful statement and it's one message, not four messages.
What's the time ready for that back then?
No, it was not. We were. I had a really hard time making a living.
How were you successful?
So I grabbed my friend Peggy Smith, and she was working at Chez Panisse with Alice Waters and had been a chef there for 17 years. And there was a building for sale in Point Reyes, an old barn. And I said, let's fix this place up and make it a marketplace so that all the visitors to the National Seashore can stop in and get their lunch and we can make some cheese with Albert's milk and, you know, it'll be really great. And still, you know, that was great. And we are very proud of that business, but it was hard to make it viable because the population of that area is so small.
Yeah. The population itself would not be able to support it, right? It's carried by tourists as well.
Yes.
But what a vision to have a local food hub, Tamales Bay Foods in Point Reyes, and trust that that investment, I mean, it, you know, the area gets quite a lot of tourists, but not the food awareness was just simply not there. That we're talking, what, mid-90s?
It was mid-90s, and we actually opened the doors in 97. And a few years before that, we also helped start the farmer's market at Toby's Feed Barn. And so we were moving on many levels. I was on the board of Marin Agricultural Land Trust, and one of the founders is Albert's mother, Ellen Strauss. And Ellen told me that we can save this land and make it, you know, affordable for the farmers to manage the land. But unless they're growing things that are making more money than commodity products, we can't force them to farm.
Yeah, it's incredible that Ellen Strauss had that vision of what has been created in Marin now and really throughout the nation now, 25 plus years ago.
Yeah, and, you know, that's what our business is about, but it's also what the organization Marin Organic is about. And Ellen was on the founding board of Marin Organic, along with a handful of hippies, you know, like-minded people, environmentalists, and really great farmers like Warren Weber. So, you know, all of these things working together made it interesting to farm again. You know, these young people who were leaving the farm started to come back.
So Tamales Bay Foods took off, was successful pretty much from the day it opened.
It was very popular, yeah. And it was financially successful when we opened an outpost in the city where the people actually live.
So when did the cheese making come in as an idea?
It came in from the get-go, but we never meant to be award-winning cheesemakers. We only meant to make some nice, fresh fromage blanc, like this one I brought today, that's just a concentration of this beautiful milk. And then we were going to work with other aged cheeses from the outlying areas.
So you knew you had a passion for cheese? Like, why cheese? You just loved it.
I love cheese, but also it seemed like a great thing for the region to focus on because these guys already knew how to make beautiful milk and grow great pastures and develop silage that was sweet and not sour. I mean, they already knew all of that. They just didn't have that next step, which is, you know, making a more sophisticated
production, yeah,
product, and then having access to the marketplace.
It's such an reoccurring underlying theme throughout the shows that Tom Stubbs, for example, from Stubbs Vineyard said, you know, without good grapes, you can't make good wine, right? You can still make bad wine from great grapes, but you need great grapes to make great wine. And you are saying the same thing. You need great milk, Strauss and other local dairies, to make your kind of cheese. What is it about the milk? What is special about Marin's?
Marin and all of the coastal zone, Sonoma County, Mendocino County, Humboldt County, has this really wonderful fog that comes across every night.
And like today, how appropriate.
Like today. You know, Napa talks, the winemakers talk about that in Napa. That's what makes their region unique. They're more inland, so it's warmer. The coast is very cool all year long, but it's not cold and it's not hot. So it's great for dairy animals. They're very happy there.
And what's the impact on grass?
And the grass is, if managed properly, these are pasture lands. They always have been. That there wasn't a tree cut down to create a pasture. They traditionally had elk and other
hundreds of years.
Yeah, and so, you know, this is really the best way to manage the land.
And what does it do to the milk? What is, from your perspective, I'm sure you've tasted and tried and seen hundreds of differences of milk. What makes it so golden? Like, what's the quality, like butter fat, how it reacts in the cheese making process?
You know, absolutely. You know, it's what the animal's eating. So, you know, Albert Strauss has a nutritionist on staff to make sure the animals are healthy because that way they don't get sick. And so it's easier to manage them organically. The grasses have to be delicious and healthy. And the breed of animal dictates the level of butterfat along with the feed ration. So a Holstein has the least butterfat but the highest volume. And high volume was what we were looking for after World War II because all these babies were born and it was thought that they should drink a lot of milk.
Quantity was it.
Quantity. And butterfat was less important. So now we're shifting back and we're, you know, Holstein was like the monocrop of dairy. You know, they were just trying to churn out as much milk as possible.
Holstein is the black and white,
they're
right?
The black and white.
Exactly.
And the Jersey, we're working with Jersey milk for one of our cheeses now. That has higher butterfat, higher protein, and lower volume.
And Jerseys are those beautiful, sweet brown cows.
With the big eyes, yes. And in Europe, they always call out the breed of animal when they're talking about their cheese. And you know, there's red cows for Parmesan, and they're Ayrshires and Guernseys. And, you know, we kind of got rid of all those, and now we're getting them back.
So what are the parts that define the quality of milk? You said butterfat, protein content. What else? Like what would you describe for a particular cheese would be a great milk? What else are you looking for in milk?
Well, there's always the flavor in the water. You know, they're drinking a lot of water, and the flora of the place.
Really, the water that the cows drink will define how the milk turns out, which will define how the cheese turns out.
Oh yeah, it's a huge part. And then we're using water, you know, in the cheeses that we make, we're washing our curds with warm water, and that makes them a cooked and washed curd, which is typical of Gouda cheeses. We use that process for even our soft cheeses, and that rinses the acidity off of the curds.
Okay, let's talk about that.
Make that much sweeter.
How so? You have exceptional milk and Marin.
Yeah.
And you have two processing facilities, right? One in Point Reyes Station and one in Petaluma, a new one.
Right.
That opened, what, a year ago?
Yes.
And what do you make in Point Reyes?
Point Reyes, we make only Red Hawk. And that is a cheese that we don't think we could make anywhere else.
Why is that?
Because we depend on a bacteria called Bacterium linen that's wild in the air. It loves the salt and the dampness.
And you didn't know you had it, right? Tell us the story.
We didn't know we had it.
What were you trying to actually make?
I was trying to grow the white mold that's on our Mount Tam cheese, and it's typical kind of a brie or camembert mold. A really beautiful, fluffy white, and for some reason, I was having a hard time growing that in the aging room. And so I re-inoculated the rind by spraying it with a solution of this bacteria. And it's a mold. And instead of growing more of that mold, it killed everything on the rind. And this red bacteria started to grow. And that is the Bacterium linen. That is a rind that you'll see on a Taleggio or a Pont d'Evêque, you know, stinky red, sticky rind. I thought, oh, God, and I just forgot about it for another couple of weeks. And when I brought it out, Peggy said, this is the best cheese you've ever made. How can you do it again?
Wow. So it was, what, you almost fought it, or at least it was a mistake? Like, what is the, how would
oh,
you?
Oh, yeah, it was a mistake, and it was a disappointment. And, you know, we had this wonderful person on staff, Kate Arding, who now has gone on to start a cheese magazine, Culture, but she came from Neil's Yard Dairy in England and really helped us learn about how to manage cheese, how to take care of it, you know, because it's changing every day when it's made by hand and it has these natural rinds or wild rinds.
It's a living entity, right?
It's living, yeah. And you know, you have to catch it at its peak to put it on the counter, you know, it does have a peak, and then it starts to deteriorate.
And the peak is what, a couple of weeks, 3 weeks?
It depends on the cheese. It depends on the make. It depends on the season. And that's why it's good to have a cheesemonger or, you know, go to a counter with a person who's taking care of that cheese that can talk about it and let you know that the Stilton's really strong this week. Do you want that one, or do you want the one that's coming in next week that's going to be very sweet?
So it reacts to really outside temperatures and humidity and all that?
Yes, it does.
And so to finish the story of the Red Hawk, that cheese won Best Cheese in America by the American Cheese Board in, what,
2003. Yeah, and then this year it won second best after Rogue River Blue, which is another one of our favorites from Oregon.
Wow, wonderful. And what do you produce in Petaluma?
Petaluma, we make a lot of Mount Tams in Petaluma. That's our most popular cheese. It's our most accessible. It's made, it has certain characteristics of a brie triple cream. So it's just easy to love. If you bring that to a party, it's like no one's going to turn it down. Yeah.
So what, let's talk about the difference of how you make cheese in a minute. This is fascinating. I'm talking with Sue Conley, one of the two cowgirls of Cowgirl Creamery. And this is an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg. We'll be right back after the break.
An Organic Conversation is brought to you by Spotica Skincare. Founded by Janet Lee Katzen, Spotica is a holistic approach to skincare that is 100% pure and natural, free of synthetic chemicals, and includes organic and wild-crafted ingredients. For more information about Spotica skincare products and the Spotica Spa, visit spotica.com. That's SPHATIKA.com.
Hi, I'm Peter Walsh. My wife and I founded Manika Jewelry with the intention to offer a different kind of jewelry. Beautiful, made by local Bay Area artists, and without a social or environmental compromise. Our featured designers use reclaimed precious metals and Kimberly certified gemstones. It's jewelry made with heart and soul. Come visit our store just off Union Square at 11 Maiden Lane in San Francisco, or visit our website at manikajewelry.com.
For the ultimate West Marin experience, visit Toby's Feed Barn in Point Reyes Station, home of the Point Reyes Farmers Market every Saturday. Toby's Feed Barn features organic produce, native plants, gifts, books, an organic coffee bar, an art gallery, concerts, even daily yoga classes. Toby's Feed Barn in downtown Point Reyes Station, open 7 days a week, family-owned and operated since 1942, a West Marin original. For more information, visit tobysfeedbarn.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Marin Organic is an association of organic producers in Marin County, California, which has become one of the most progressive voices in the sustainable food movement in the United States. Through its many innovative initiatives, such as a school lunch and gleaning program, Marin Organic is creating a healthy, sustainable, and safe environment for all beings, today and for generations to come. Please become a partner in our work by visiting marinorganic.org and by pledging your support now. Thank you.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm your host, Helga Hellberg, and my guest today, Sue Conley, a true cowgirl who, with her partner, Peck Smith, started Cowgirl Creamery to sell artisan cheeses and protect that tradition of artisan cheese making. Sue, great to have you. Can you guide us through what it takes to make cheese? There are, hundreds? There may be thousands of different cheeses, right? And we know that different milk makes different cheeses. Actually, I'm on your website right now, cowgirlcreamery.com. You have a library, and I'm sure these are not all the cheeses that exist, but it's pretty mind-blowing to see how many hundreds and hundreds of cheeses are out there, all made from different milks and then different processes. Are there recipes for cheeses? How would guide us through the process? What does it take, and how do you know?
There are recipes for cheeses, but what happens is you get that recipe into your room in your region,
and everything changes.
And everything changes. And so, as we were learning to make cheese, we were welcomed into the cheese rooms of some really great small producers, and they said, you know what, just, you know, take this and try it, because
right. Whatever we're telling you might not work.
Yeah, it's going to be totally different, but you'll learn something, and then you'll repeat it and repeat it. And you'll, you know, if you can make something great every day, then you'll be fine.
So is that as tricky to make sure you can repeat it so that the customer knows what he or she is getting?
Yeah, that's really
margin of 10%.
Yeah, we give it. We have a little range of acceptability, and we taste all the cheeses before they go out. And each batch is different, but and we release some cheeses that were made later before the cheeses that were made earlier, because they're ripening faster.
Sure.
So it's the whole thing is, as you said, it's alive. So you have to.
So you're literally sampling every single batch?
Oh, yeah.
And the people that define whether or not this is acceptable or not is you Peg and a couple of cheese tasters?
Yeah, because we have a retail division and a wholesale. We distribute cheese. So we get representatives from each division to say, you know, the retail, I can't sell this at my counter. So how could we put it into distribution? And
wow, what a job.
Yeah, it's really, it's an important part of what we do. And we do that not just with our cheeses, but with all the cheeses that we work with.
So it takes fantastic milk. It takes some kind of recipes. It takes experience. But what are the stages? You take the milk and...
So I brought some cheese with me today, and the easiest cheese to make is a fromage blanc, and that can be with sheep milk, cow milk, or goat milk. So in the store, you'll see that as fresh chèvre if it's goat, or it would be fromage blanc if it's cow milk. And you simply inoculate the milk with cultures, which are bacteria, and they react.
Did you buy those, or where did you get those?
You can buy them to make at home online at cheesemaking.com.
And you have your own?
We buy them from a larger culture house. You could also just use buttermilk at home because that has some active cultures in it. And let it rest overnight. In the morning, it looks like yogurt. And you scoop it into a cheesecloth sack.
It thickens up, right?
Right. Coagulates.
Coagulates. That's right.
And then you drain it.
Try to avoid that word. It's thickening. Yes. That one.
How do you say coagulate in German?
Yeah, I can't even. I don't know. I'll think about it.
Yeah, that drains in a cheesecloth sack. And it takes about 4 hours. And then it's a nice cream.
You get the water out.
Right. And the water is the whey. And the what's left is the curd. And there, you know, that's like the most
basic
cheese.
And it keeps getting thicker and thicker, right?
It does. Yeah.
Coagulating.
But since you haven't done anything else to that curd, you know, it's going to be a very simple, straightforward
light
cheese.
So what would that taste like? You're not adding salt at this stage yet.
And you need to add salt, and that is the next ingredient.
Oh, okay.
You know, you need salt in cheese for flavor, and if you put it on the rind, it also helps to toughen the rind so it can protect the cheese as it ages.
So the fromage blanc at that stage, thickened overnight, you extract the water, it gets a little bit thicker. Is that it?
That's it. You add salt and it's done. Now, if you wanted to make a little Provençal style cheese that you see like an ashed pyramid, you would just take that curd and put it into a form and let it drain a little more so it takes the shape of that. Then you would have...
Add some herbs of Provençal.
Yeah. And so there's like the simplest of all cheeses and delicious. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that cheese. So
we had a little slice of that on a slice of apple, a little bit of your fromage blanc. It's complex. I mean, it's complete. It's like a real cheese.
Yeah, and that comes from
very light,
just
beautiful.
Having great milk.
Yeah.
And a light touch.
And that's Albert Strauss's milk?
It is, yeah.
Beautiful.
The other ingredient in making hard cheeses is rennet, and that's an enzyme. And that coagulates the milk quickly. We were counting on lactic acid in the fromage blanc, but now we want to make a cheese that is aged for a long time.
So how do they do it when it says no rennet on harder cheeses? What do they use instead?
What they're using is a vegetarian rennet, and sometimes they just say rennetless because traditional rennet comes from the calf's stomach.
Mm-hmm.
So you can also coagulate milk with artichoke, thistle, mushrooms, they have a similar enzyme.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as good for aged cheese. It tends to get bitter, but if it's lightly aged, like our Mount Tam and Red Hawk are only aged for a month or two,
mm-hmm.
and that works really well.
So there's fresh cheese, and then slightly or lightly aged is what, up to 60 days?
Yeah.
Around there?
Yeah. And then after, in the United States, you can make a raw milk cheese if it's aged over 60 days. So you will see raw milk cheeses in the marketplace that were made in Europe and America. If they're under 60 days, the milk must be pasteurized.
Oh, to what, kill any pathogens that might be in the milk? Or after
Correct.
60 days, they have been transformed?
Correct.
They're no longer harmful?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So that's kind of a short explanation of how cheese is made. A slight variation in temperature, the conditions in the aging room, the degree that you stir the curds after they've coagulated, these things create entirely different end result. So,
and then I know you kind of, you can wash the rind, not just with salt, but with even aromatic, right, herbs or water over and over and over again. And it kind of seeps into the cheese, which I've seen with the blue cheese. And that actually really gets inoculated with that blue mold that
it
you brought.
It does. The blue mold is in the milk when you add the cultures and the enzymes. You also add a little bit of that blue mold in the milk, but it only grows if it hits the air. So they pierce the cheese with long needles.
Air in it.
And that's why the cheese is veined.
That's so interesting. And who's making that blue cheese?
That is our neighbor, Point Reyes Blue.
And it's the only blue cheese from California that is the homestead, right, where the cows are on the same.
It is a farmstead. And that's
farmstead.
Farmstead. That's a distinguishing factor. Our cheese is called artisan because it's made with milk that we bring in from a neighboring farm.
Yes.
And it's made in small batches. So those are definitions that we borrow from France. And then they skip over everything in between and call everything else industrial.
And the blue cheese is farmstead, meaning that the cows that the Giacomini family owns and has on their property is solely used to make this kind of cheese, right?
Correct.
Point Reyes Blue. What else are we looking at? So you're making Red Hawk, award-winning Red Hawk and Point Reyes, Mount Tam in Petaluma, and there are a couple others that you make.
We're making our fresh cheeses in Petaluma and a seasonal cheese. Right now it's called Pierce Point, and that's made with 100% Jersey milk from John Tavernas' farm. He's about 5 miles from downtown Petaluma and has a really great small organic dairy.
And why seasonal cheese? Like, what's the idea behind it? And from a marketing perspective, I mean, it only is around for what, 3 months?
Yes, it's not our biggest seller.
Why go through it? But it's phenomenal. But what was the idea behind it?
The idea is that the milk does change from season to season, depending on what the animals are eating and whether they're on pasture. And the winter cheeses are the milk's a little lazy, a little fatty.
The milk is lazy.
Yes. The cows are just hanging out. You know, they're not.
How do you see that in the milk?
Well, because they're eating a higher, they're eating richer foods because they're not on the grass. And so the milk is kind of, it's not bright like the spring, you know, the spring grass.
Yeah.
And.
Which we have pastures in Marin in this case until what, May?
Right.
June-ish.
Right. And then the summer, they're drinking more water. I mean, you know, it just changes. So we wanted to highlight the seasonality of the milk. And we use something on the rind that is indicative of that season. So the winter cheese, Pierce Point, has dried herbs of Point Reyes. And that's fennel and bay, chamomile. These are all indigenous to our place. And in the spring, we use a stinging nettle leaf. That is harvested on some of the organic farms. It's growing wild on the creek beds, but it's on certified organic land.
And you wrap the entire cheese with it. So you have a spring cheese that's seasonal and a fall cheese that's seasonal. When is Pierce Point coming out now?
It's out now,
out now.
It comes out just in September after Labor Day.
And it will leave in December?
It'll leave in December. We're trying to work with Janet Brown, who grows sweet peppers, gypsy peppers, and she's brought us some dried gypsy peppers that we're going to work with to make it maybe a Christmas cheese.
That sounds beautiful. So besides all these amazing cheeses that you make, you are a keen advocate for artisan cheese making throughout the United States. Why? Why is it important that we keep that tradition other than it's delicious and it's diverse? But what have you found within your work of why it's so important to keep these traditions alive?
Well, we were inspired by two companies, Neil's Yard Dairy in London and Jean Delos in Bordeaux, France. Both of them have stores downtown, and their mission is to keep artisan cheesemaking viable in their region by bringing it to the market and presenting it in the downtown area where the people live. And in Europe, just as in the United States, these traditions were dying. And I think that if Neil's Yard Dairy didn't open that store in the 70s, we wouldn't have traditional Cheshire and Stilton and Montgomery cheddar, because they were losing market to commodity makers that were making the same cheeses with the same name, but with machines. So they were cheaper, but the quality and the character of them was diminished. So it's almost like the population was, you know, slowly forgetting about the true flavors and distinctions of these cheeses. And the farms then go out of business because...
And it's so interesting that the loss of diversity is really directly a loss of quality of life, right? I mean, the flavors, the traditions, the local milk sheds, I remember Terra Madre, the gathering of world food communities in Italy, in Torino every 2 years. It was really a celebration way beyond food, right? We are talking food, of course, in this show every time. But tasting these cheeses, there's hundreds, if not, or there's actually there's thousands of years. What's the history of cheese, of tradition?
Well, it's one of the oldest foods, and it's preserved milk. You know, it got people through winters, through the desert, where, you know, these really long periods where they weren't growing.
Was that the intention? Instead of making great cheeses, just to preserve milk?
Yes.
And who started it, you know?
Well, it's all folklore about milk being put into the stomach of a cow to take it across the desert, you know, in Mesopotamia. And when they got to the other side, it was firm. Cheese. It was cheese. And they said, that's good. So they repeated it.
And so how do you pick other cheesemakers? Who else do you represent? What did you bring here today, for example?
Well, I brought the fresh chèvre and the fresh fromage, just so you can taste the great milk. And then I brought our Mount Tam, which is triple cream.
So when you say chèvre, fromage blanc is made out of cow's milk, and chèvre is made out of
goat milk. Yes.
And it has a little bit more pungent flavor.
It does, and that's just an extra enzyme that goat milk has. It gives it that. And the only word I have to describe it is goaty, a little bit of a goaty flavor.
But it's really the same exact process.
Yes. And then I brought the Mount Tam that we make in Point Reyes. That's a triple cream with the white mold on the outside. And I brought another one from our friends up in Washington State, Mount Townsend. It's called Cirrus. And they have a relationship with a dairy in their area. They buy all their milk and produce three cheeses. And this one is very similar to the Mount Tam, but they don't cook the curd. They just scoop it into forms when it's, you know, after it sets like a yogurt, they cut it into squares and scoop it into a mold, and it drains very slowly. So it's, this one will get runny on the plate, whereas the Mount Tam won't, because it's very firm.
So the riper it gets really runny.
Right. And because Mount Tam has been cooked, it stays very firm and it won't ammoniate in the same way as a brie. I also brought some blue from Point Reyes, and that is a beautiful, beautiful cheese. As you said, a farmstead. They work with...
The only in California, right?
The only in California. And they work with primarily Holstein cows, but they do skim some of the cream. Or they skim milk so that it's a little richer.
Because the fat rises, take the more fatty part.
Right. And then I brought one from Virginia called Everona, and this is made by a very famous cheesemaker who's also a doctor in her town, and she has a herd of sheep that she developed because she was raising dogs that were sheep herding dogs, and she needed to have some sheep so the dogs could practice, and ended up just falling in love with dairying and the sheep and then the cheese making in order to preserve the milk.
So how do you pick these? What's your, of what you include in your store, the relationships you keep? What do you go by? How do you, how did you know about these?
Well, we're in the American Cheese Society, which is a national organization with about 300 cheesemakers.
All artisan cheesemakers.
There are some larger companies that participate, but the organization was founded by a professor at Cornell who was appalled at the industry of cheesemaking in the United States in the 70s and got his graduate students to study cheese with him. He said, "We have to teach Americans how to make better cheese. This is the goal of this organization." And so it has really developed a lot of cheesemakers because of the great networking. And now we have cheese guilds in almost every state. We have a California Artisan Cheese Guild, and that's dedicated to, you know, just, we need to learn. We need to be better. And we need to educate consumers. You know, why is this more expensive? Well, because we're paying people a living wage. They're getting health insurance. We're paying top dollar for the milk. We're trying to take care of our region and our culture and keep the whole thing healthy.
And, you know, when it comes to cheap or not cheap, there, of course, the hidden cost of non-organic, non-artisan cheese making. I mean, we are shipping milk from halfway across the nation to then make, turn it into cheese, and then we ship the cheese back to where the milk came from, right?
Yes, and there, you know, if it's
miles away.
If you're working with millions of gallons of milk, which some cheesemakers are in the Central Valley, 90% of the milk is the byproduct whey. So if you're processing a million gallons, which is one producer was doing, a million gallons per day, 900,000 gallons of that is whey, which is really acidic and poisons the waterway. So it needs to be treated and processed.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a second. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg, and I'm speaking with Sue Connolly today, who started with Peg Smith Cowgirl Creamery. We'll be right back after the break.
For once in my life, it's gonna feel real good. Gonna make a difference. Gonna make it right. As I turn up the collar on my favorite winter coat, this wind is blowing my mind. I see the kids in the street.
An Organic Conversation is brought to you by Spotica Skincare. Founded by Janet Lee Katzen, Spotica is a holistic approach to skincare that is 100% pure and natural, free of synthetic chemicals, and includes organic and wild-crafted ingredients. For more information about Spotica Skincare products and the Spotica Spa, visit spotica.com. That's SPHATIKA.com.
Marin Organic, an association of organic food producers in Marin County, California, is helping to create a healthy and sustainable food shed just north of the Golden Gate Bridge. A model for how to feed a region in a way that is economically viable, environmentally sound, socially just, and culturally appropriate. The opportunity to change the world is right on our place. Be a part of the solution. For more information on Marin Organic and how to support its efforts, visit marinorganic.org.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Are you looking for a romantic and unusual location in the Bay Area for your wedding or upcoming anniversary? Toby's Feed Barn offers the perfect venue for your celebration. A rustic barn in the heart of beautiful West Marin, with local organic caterers ready to delight your guests amid bales of hay. Toby's Feed Barn in downtown Point Reyes Station. Open 7 days a week. Family owned and operated since 1942. A West Marin original. For more information, visit tobysfeedbarn.com.
Hi, I'm Peter Walsh. My wife and I founded Manika Jewelry with the intention to offer a different kind of jewelry. Beautiful, made by local Bay Area artists, and without a social or environmental compromise. Our featured designers use reclaimed precious metals and Kimberly certified gemstones. It's jewelry made with heart and soul. Come visit our store just off Union Square at 11 Maiden Lane in San Francisco, or visit our website at manikajewelry.com.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm your host, Helge Hellberg, and my partner here in the studio today is Sue Conley, who owns and operates Cowgirl Creamery, one of the most wonderful and award-winning artisan cheesemaking places in the United States. Sue, you were saying that some larger industrial cheesemakers are going through, what, up to a million gallons of milk?
Correct.
With 90% being whey. 900,000 gallons that is not used.
What they do is set up a drying plant right next to the cheese plant, and they dry the whey, but there's still a lot of acidic kind of byproduct to that. So that's something that we deal with on a very small scale.
And then what do they do with the whey?
Well, you eat it in your processed foods.
Yeah, because it's a lot of processed food.
It's actually more valuable than commodity cheese.
If in your case, you are going through what, 2,000, 3,000 gallons a week?
Correct.
And our office with More Organic is directly above your production facility in Point Reyes, and we see the local pig producer come up and pick it up because he feeds it to his pigs, right? They love it.
He does, yes. It's really nutritious. It's because our cheese is triple cream, it has a little extra butter fat in it. It's got protein, all the minerals they need.
It's a party.
It's a pig party. And in Petaluma, we are working to get another pig farmer to pick up there. But meanwhile, it's going back to Taverna's farm into his waste pond, which has his manure, and the whey helps to break down the manure, and then it's spread on his fields as fertilizer. It's a nice use. I would rather have it go to the pigs, but
yeah. But that cycle, it's interesting that as soon as we concentrate production, everything we do about it becomes an environmental challenge, right? And if we stay a certain size, everything becomes a resource. It's really there's this tipping point. What have you found in your work? You started, your very first batch was what? What did you make? Do you remember?
I do. We made cottage cheese, still one of my favorite cheeses to make.
Absolutely, yes.
And, it's never done in small batches. It's a real, very much a commodity cheese in the market.
How do you make it so grindy-ish? So, like it has all these little pebbles in it, right?
Right. How
do you make that consistency?
It's made with skim milk and... It's made as if you were going to keep going and make a hard cheese, but you stop it after the curds have been formed and they're rinsed with cold water, and that makes them really sweet. And then the cream that we skimmed off, we make into a dressing. So we culture that with lactic acid cultures and add some milk so it's not so heavy. And that's called a dressing. So every cottage cheese, even if it's made by a machine, has a dressing. Ours happens to be just amazing, delicious.
Because the curd itself would just be dry and like little hard, dry little pebbles.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's actually
so that's,
one of my favorite.
That's what I
that was
started
the first
with.
Batch.
Yeah.
What, 12 years ago?
Yes. And I will say that I'm not making cheese myself anymore, and the people who are making it are so much better than I was. It's really exciting.
But you started it.
Yeah, and one of our cheesemakers came from farming, and one came from cooking. So they're really a good team.
Hmm. And what have you found in 12 years? Like, what has this world of cheesemaking brought to you? Can you share a story of a dairy or a consumer? Like, how has your philosophy of life changed by working with milk and the the whole process, the whole.
Well, it is an entree into this wonderful world of dairying and cheese making. And I think when you alluded to the Terra Madre, it's an entree into the world, and we're all doing the same things, but we can be on any part of the globe. We're dealing with the same issues of course, nature and weather, the breeds, the marketplace, you know, what prices we're all getting for what we're doing. So, you know, it's a very, our focus is very local, but I can go any place in the world and say I'm a cheesemaker and the doors open. I think that, you know, that's been, that can keep me going forever because we're introduced to science, nature, culture, you know, great people. And I would say that, you know, there's no turning back.
Yeah, beautiful. Who did you talk to at Terra Madre? I know there were people from Finland that I had a chance to engage with. There were cheesemakers, and interesting, they were making cheese out of yak, right? Out of completely different animals that we don't have here in the United States. Very pungent. And they were explaining that this is the one cheese that doesn't freeze above, you know, 5,000 feet, or I don't remember exactly the story, but it was so interesting how the local landscape, wherever they were, had adopted in the product, of course, but how directly it had adopted to the final product that they were making. Beautiful.
Yeah, and that's really true that you can have it, you know, you can practice dairying almost anywhere. And so
any altitude, any climate zone.
Specifically in the United States, you know, we've lost a lot of local dairies, and I mean, it's very centralized, so that, you know, whatever's left that we can save is critical. And there are pockets in Wisconsin, in New England, and upstate New York that are really flourishing because they're feeding off of each other's energy in cheese making through these guilds and, you know, other networking groups.
And so, it's a tradition, right? It's beyond the very act of making cheese and selling it, that again, full circle, as we said in the beginning, that kind of food tradition is really a fabric of life, right? Be it cheese or winemaking, or last week we had Dario Cecchini on, Italy's famous butcher, and his reverence for life and his respect for the animal, it was incredible. It was so sincere. And if we lost that tradition, automatically we would lose that reverence. Let's talk about batch number 8. I think we are on to batch number 10, right?
We're on 10 now. We're getting
what
ready.
What happened? you had the idea, what, a year ago to make another cheese? How long has this been in the making?
We've been working on a new cheese for about a year. And of course, you know, if you're making an aged cheese, you have to wait several months to even
taste it,
understand what
idea.
The flavor is going to be like. So we got to a point where it was getting good. It's not perfect.
You wanted to make what? A harder cheese that could be eaten with any food, wine. What was the objective?
It started with Judy Rogers. We asked Judy Rogers, who's really a great chef from Zuni Cafe in San Francisco, and we asked her what she was using on her pizza, and she uses a fresh Asiago. And we said, you know, if we could make something like that, would you replace ours?
And the Asiago has a pretty substantial overtone, very sharp.
Yeah.
When it fades.
When it's aged, it's very sharp. And when it's young, it's a little sweeter. And so we were going for the young. That's what she uses, is the young Asiago. And so we've just keep taking her, you know, batch number 1, batch number 2. How's this? How's batch number 3?
Oh, How are we doing? She was your guinea pig.
Yeah, she's part of the tasting team. And
why didn't you call me?
Well, we are trying to get it into the school lunch program over there.
Oh, great.
Through Marin Organic. But so it's a 25-pound wheel, it's aged for 2 months, and it's not a knock your head off kind of a cheese. It's a very subtle, easygoing.
Yeah.
Something you would eat when you need a snack or make a grilled cheese. And We're not quite satisfied with it, but it's very good. So we're just naming it by batch. And now people said, hey, that batch number 6, couldn't you get something a little closer to that? So, it, you know, our whole community's involved in the process. And in the end, it will be called Wagon Wheel. We expect it to be released at Christmas.
You don't want to stay with batches.
No.
That's hard to print, right? Because they constantly change. Yeah, I had batch number 8, and it's a very, taste-wise, very firm, very together, not too loud, beautiful, simple, but enough going on. Like, it's just a really good, beautiful...
Your everyday cheese.
Yeah, really, really.
Yeah, that's what we're
shooting
for.
You'll never get tired of it, I'm sure, because it's just, yeah, gorgeous, very well balanced. So now you're on to batch number 10.
We're on 10.
It, right?
You
didn't
have it? No, you have to go to the ferry building to get it.
And you will be there later.
Yeah.
That's great. If people want to get more involved with Cowgirl, you have a website and there's a bunch going on. You have a mailing list. You have a... You ship cheese, right? You have a cheese library. What's the Artisan Cheese Club? How can people get involved?
Oh, the club actually is just a way to get a great selection of cheese in the mail every month. And you can learn more about the cheeses on the Library of Cheese, which is, it's just a great resource that chefs use and retailers to educate their customers on the nuances of the different cheeses, and it shows what kind of milk the cheese is made with, whether it's pasteurized, what kind of rennets used, a little story about the farm.
So the archive has, what, 200, 300 cheeses on it?
Yeah, and we don't have those cheeses available all the time, right. But they're cheeses we work with over the course of a year.
And you show photos and how they're made, just a general description, and then where you can get it. And the Cheese Club.
The Cheese Club.
People sign up, and then what do they get?
They get a selection of cheeses every month, or they could do a 3-month, 6-month, or 12-month club. And we also do have activities over the course of the year where we do classes and those sorts
of things. Tastings,
yeah.
And people can visit your facility both in Point Reyes as well as in Petaluma, right?
Right. We have really, really simple tours and... but you can come anytime to Point Reyes and watch the cheesemakers behind glass. It's open Wednesday through Sunday, 10 to 6. And really, you can learn so much just by observing.
Watching, yeah. What are you making right now out there?
Red Hawk.
Red Hawk, of course.
Red Hawk for Christmas. Yeah, right. We're making as many as we can.
And people can find you every Saturday morning, pretty much?
Yes, I usually am in front of the cheese shop.
Yeah. At the Ferry Plaza building in downtown San Francisco. And again, all the information is on cowgirlcreamery.com on your website. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Helga.
So it's a very short hour, and we will dive into all these cheeses, I hope, in a minute. Can you stay for half an hour?
Yes, I can.
That was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thank you to our guests today, a true cowgirl, Sue Conley from Cowgirl Creamery in Marin County, California. Again, that website is cowgirlcreamery.com. Thank you for coming to the studio. An Organic Conversation is produced by the wonderful Jen Lloyd in collaboration with the amazing Kareem Edwards. Production assistant is Justin Hirigoyen. Underwriting production provided by The Ear, the one and only Mark Van Gelder. Thank you all, and also always thanks to the team here at Green 960, our very own Fab Five, Corey Calward, Mark McNone, Chris Gardner, and of course, John Scott and John Plessis. Also, always thank you, our listeners, for being part of this show and for actually listening. For blogs, podcasts, and more information on this show and previous shows, please visit our website at anorganicconversation.com. And you can also find us on iTunes, where you can download An Organic Conversation to your iPhone or iPod and take us with you wherever you may go. If you would like to read my blog, please visit helgahelberg.com. And last but not least, you can also follow us now on Facebook and Twitter. In both cases, please look for An Organic Conversation. We love to hear from you. Please send us your comments and questions to share@anorganicconversation.com. Coming up next is the Gavin Newsom Show. Please stay put. I'm your host, Helga Hellberg. Have a great weekend, and thanks again for listening to An Organic Conversation here on Green 960. I can't wait for the-